On today's show, we talk with Disney World author Susan Vaness about her new book, Walt Disney World Hacks. This is WRWDW, the Disney World Planning Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 227. I'm your host, Julie Elster, creator of WRWDW.com, the Disney World Planning website. I'm so excited about today's show. With me is author of the brand new book, Walt Disney World Hacks, the second edition, as well as several other books about the park. So we're going to talk to her about the new book, maybe a couple of the other books that I might have read, and some of the questions that you guys submitted to me on Instagram because you wanted to hear from the expert. But she's not only an author, she's a journalist, travel writer, content creator. Susan Vaness, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here.
That's really nice. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I was very excited when you agreed to be on the show. And I'm going to, I know everybody can't see this because, you know, this is a podcast, but this is like the book that I would read in my bathtub. You can tell it's all wet. The Hidden Magic of Walt Disney World I've had for many years. And it's one of my favorites. So very, very excited to have you on the show today. So for a little bit of background for people, you are like the Disney World author. How many books have you written?
Well, there are currently three editions of The Hidden Magic of Walt Disney World. Once we get back, my husband and I are on a year-long trip in an RV. Once we get back, I'll start working on the fourth edition of The Hidden Magic. I've got Walt Disney World Trivia, Walt Disney World Planner, and then the Walt Disney World Hacks. And we have just published the second edition of Hacks.
I have to ask, with so many books, and as you're talking about, you know, coming out with new editions, how do you keep up with everything that's changing? I mean, I do a podcast and I feel like I'm every week coming up with new content, and even I feel like I can't keep up with it sometimes. Yeah. So as an author, how on earth do you keep up with all of the changes at Disney World?
It's not easy. And especially lately, in the last few years, it's been pretty tough to keep up. But my husband and I have a travel writing business, and we do a huge amount of content for other companies. So it just feels like it's every single day, you know, we're always keeping up as much as we possibly can. But, you know, there's nothing like being in the parks to be able to catch up as well. So, you're right. It's not easy. It's a full-time job.
It is. It really is. Okay, so that's it. I know you said you're on an RV trip. And before we started recording, you said it had been about 11 months traveling in an RV. So aside from the last 11 months, typically, how often are you in the parks?
Well, obviously, the pandemic kind of changed that a little bit for us. But normally, you know, we had a house right behind Magic Kingdom. So it was Magic Kingdom, there's a lake, and then there was our house. So, you know, it was a 5-minute drive. So we used to make Epcot our exercise, you know, we'd walk around roller coasters a couple of times. So we were in the parks a lot.
That makes like my walks around my boring neighborhood seem really lame that you would just do your like evening walks around Epcot.
It's probably easier to walk around your neighborhood because you know how Epcot can be. Sometimes it's just packed. So
have you always lived right by the parks?
No. I'm from Michigan. My husband's from the UK. So I think it's been about 20 years that we moved down to a house in Florida in Orlando.
I assume this was like a business decision at that point, like when you're buying the house next to Magic Kingdom.
Definitely, yeah.
What point did you start going to the parks? And at what point were you like, I'm an expert, I need to get this stuff down on paper?
Yeah, I started going to the parks shortly after Magic Kingdom first opened. My family was coming down to Miami for a trip, and you know, we'd heard about this place, this Walt Disney World place, and thought we'd just kind of drop by. So we did. We just spent a day there. And I can't remember how old I was. It was 71. You know what? I'm not going to say how old I was.
We don't want to do the math. It's fine. You're 29 forever and end of story.
Exactly. Yeah. But I remembered it and thought it was an amazing place. And then I didn't go again until after Epcot was open. And that's when I really just started feel... just noticing the layers of the attractions. You know, there's like the big in-your-face part of an attraction. And then as you start to peel it away, you get down to these really small details that just tell this full story. And that's when I started getting really interested in what became the hidden magic of Walt Disney World, the book. I don't think I would ever call myself an expert because, as you know, there's so much to know. So
right.
I'm not sure call myself an expert.
That kind of leads me to my next question, because I was first introduced to your work with The Hidden Magic. We're really here to talk about your newest book, Disney World Hacks. But I'm curious, with The Hidden Magic, how did you get all of this information? Like, what's the process? Because some of this stuff, there are times when I'm like, I know it all. Like, you think you know it all. And then someone will tell you something, and you're like, wait, really? I had no idea. And that's how I felt like when I first started reading your book several years ago. I was like, I know everything. And then I'm flipping through it, I'm like, I know nothing. So how did you compile this information? Where did you get this information? Am I allowed to know? Are we allowed to know?
Oh, yeah,
how you
absolutely.
Got it?
Yeah, it's no secret at all. I mean, I just was a big fan. I used to go to Disney when I lived in Michigan. You know, we went down every year for vacation. Just over the years, I started really looking for these small details. So it was partly what I was kind of picking up myself. And then, of course, once we moved there, that was practically my whole focus. But it's also, you know, talking to cast members and talking to other guests and just the Disney community talking about it. But because we have a travel writing business and we do more than the books, we often get invited to press events where we have access to talking to Imagineers.
You get to meet people.
And I mean, obviously, they're the ones. So it's been a combination of discovering these things in different ways.
Okay. And so then you're able to pick their brains and get all the little secrets.
Yeah, a little bit. Because the Imagineers don't, they want you to discover these things.
Sure.
But sometimes it's worked out really well. And other times, maybe not as much. But
I... Yeah. Oh, I'd love to hear about maybe not as much.
Yeah, we'll go off record on that one.
Yeah, right. I sometimes wonder what Imagineers think of people. I don't know that like I'm so much a big deal because I talk mostly about planning. But when they see like these YouTube videos with people like really spelling out secrets, I often wonder, I'm like, I wonder what the people behind the scenes think of that, if that's an issue or not. Did you discuss your book with Imagineers specifically? Did anybody know, like, this information's going to be put in writing?
Yes. Well, I mean, they all know when they talk to me, they know that I'm a journalist. So anything they say is on record.
Sure.
I've had a couple of things off record, which I, wouldn't ever abuse that. But I have talked at length with some Imagineers who... they know I'm the author of the book, and they've been very forthcoming. But I agree. I mean, I do often wonder what they think.
Yeah,
but I've never asked because I don't want to hear it if it's not going to be
if it's not positive. But on the other side, like, they could work really hard on something and wonder, like, does anybody even know that this thing is here? So
yeah.
I don't know. I guess I could see both sides of it.
Absolutely, and some of them I think do definitely want to have some of these really obscure details noticed. And, some of the responses that I've gotten from readers are that they would never have noticed it. Because a lot of it is just you're looking at something and you know it's something special and it's got a meaning because everything is part of the story, but you just don't know what it is.
Right, right. You see the names on the windows or whatever on Main Street. And you're just like, those are they just pick names. Like, no, there's meaning behind that. And
yeah.
And just like little, like things like that, little touches that you might not otherwise notice or think twice about.
And I love that research. That's my, one of my passions is doing that kind of really deep dive research. So for me, it was really frustrating not to know these things. And so I did have to dig pretty deep on some of it. So yeah, I'm just saving you the time.
Right. Well, I don't have access to Imagineers the way you do. So, you've got the access that the rest of us don't have. You said your husband is from the UK, right? So What was his first experience with Disney? As now, like you said, he's your travel partner and you guys do this together.
The first time he came over to the U.S., he went to Disneyland and just fell in love with the attractions. And I'm sure he told me how many times, but I think he rode like Pirates of the Caribbean or what was it? Maybe it was Haunted Mansion. Again and again and again and again, and just was blown away by it. So he already came at it with this love for Disney. And when he came home from Disneyland, he calls it a bee in his bonnet. He had a bee in his bonnet about writing a guidebook for the UK market because there wasn't one specific to our British visitors. And, you know, we have a common language, but so much is different. So he wrote The Brit Guide to Orlando and Walt Disney World. By the time I met him, you know, many years later, he was already well steeped in it.
So he was already established at that point as a Disney expert. All right, let's jump into the newest book. I found this book interesting the way that it is written. It's snippets. It's compact advice. To make it, I felt like it was much easier to digest. What was like the thought in writing it that way?
I think you're exactly right. I wanted it to be something that people could just pick up. You know, you could start anywhere and you didn't have to have this big, long explanation necessarily. You could just pick and choose these ideas or the things that work for you in the way that you tour. Because we all tour the parks differently. It depends on if you have kids, if you're adults only, how many times you've been. So I wanted it to be super easy to digest and not something you had to read from cover to cover to be able to get a lot out of it.
I liked that versus some other Disney World guides. Is I felt like if I was a newbie, I could go through and highlight something or dog ear a page or put a post-it note or something rather than have page after page of text. And I really appreciated that.
Oh, good.
Let's kind of break things down into some of the sections here. So Disney Genie versus Genie Plus versus Virtual Queue versus Individual Lightning Lane versus Genie Plus Lightning Lane. I mean, it's kind of a nightmare the last few years, right?
Yeah.
So in your opinion, when are these things worth it? When aren't they worth it?
I think it all starts with what will your budget allow? If your budget allows total free rein, absolutely go for it. If it doesn't, you do have to bear that in mind. You do have to be a little bit more careful about when you use it and when you don't. But kind of as an overall guide, if you're visiting sort of the second week in January through, you know, maybe the middle of April, barring any holidays, you won't need it as much as someone who's visiting in the summertime, over Easter, during spring break, at Christmas especially. So time of year matters.
So budget and time of year, or crowd levels, I guess we could say.
Yeah, crowd levels,
the big
definitely.
Factors.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go without it, how do you do that? Like, let's say it's not in my budget. What's your approach to avoiding paying for Genie Plus?
Yeah, it is harder now to not have some kind of queue beating system than it used to be. There's sort of no getting around that. But most people will arrive at the parks around 10 a.m. So if you can get into the parks early, you're going to be able to do a lot more without the bigger crowds. And then I always say, consider the idea of taking a midday break. Just get out of the parks when they're really busy or do some of the attractions that are, you know, the less popular attractions. And if you're able, stay later into the evening, especially when there are longer hours, because most families go home after the first fireworks at Magic Kingdom. And if you've got those longer hours, you aren't going to be running into the really prohibitive queues.
Preach. This is stuff that I feel like I say on a weekly basis.
Oh, true.
It's not necessarily about the first ride you do, you know, because I tell people get there before the park opens. And they're like, well, if I'm standing around waiting to get into the park, like, how am I saving any time? Because it's not about the first ride you ride. It's about the second ride, the third ride, the fourth ride. Because like you said, people don't start pouring in until around 10. By lunchtime, it's going to be crazy. So it's like you have to think of it like that. If you can knock out that first ride immediately, then you're going to run over to that second ride, third ride, and not have a wait.
Absolutely. And hit the back of the park. If you go straight to the back of the park or go counter to where most guests are heading, you're going to be able to do a lot more. But fact of the matter is that it is harder to do it without the queue beating systems.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. I hate that that's the system. Okay, so that being said, knowing that Genie Plus can give you an advantage, what are your tips for using Genie Plus then? It's in my budget this time. So what are those tips?
Well, I mean, sort of expanding on that first idea, if you book your Genie Plus for later in the day, afternoon, when everything is really busy, don't necessarily go for those really early bookings, because you can do more first thing in the morning and then save your Genie Plus for later in the afternoon. Because you just can't, it's not like Fast Pass Plus where you could, if you were really savvy, you can knock out 5, 6, 7 attractions in it. It's not like
that. I miss it.
Yeah, me too. I miss a lot about Fast Pass. If you arrive at one of your Genie Plus selections and there's no queue or a really short queue, before you tap through, go in and cancel that and grab something else. So you don't, just because you have that on your schedule doesn't mean you have to use it. And don't use it for things like the big shows where hundreds of people are going to get it. Don't use it for that sort of thing. Those are a few. The other thing is, if you have a big group, and this worked really well with FastPass, but it seems to be working really well with Genie Plus too. If you're trying to find a time slot for a really big group, but you can't make that work, go for overlapping times. Like yours is at 3 o'clock and maybe somebody can get up for 3:15, 3:30, whatever, and you can all ride together. So just because you can't get everybody together, you know, in one time frame, doesn't mean you can't all ride together.
I haven't played around with bigger groups and Genie Plus yet, so that's good to hear for anybody who's traveling with a lot of people. I like, too, that Genie Plus, I mean, I miss FastPass, but I like that Genie Plus does, it lets you have overlapping stuff, even if it's like a dining reservation or if you've got two rides that are overlapping, it just lets you do that. And FastPass didn't. So I am glad to see that. And I'm also happy to see the updates that they've been doing in Genie Plus, where now you can go in and edit instead of just like losing. Like if you have to make changes, you don't have to risk it and cancel it all together. You can edit and make changes that way. So I'm hoping we see more changes in that direction.
I think they did with FastPass. Original FastPass was quite different to FastPass Plus. So I think they'll tweak it. And you know, guest responses are so important in that way. They need to know what's working and what's not.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to take my guest responses like, go back to paper FastPass. I miss the paper one.
I don't think anyone's reading my
surveys.
But you know how they have the little survey takers, and that needs to be a question. Do you want us to go back to FastPass Plus?
Yes, I do. And I want kiosks, and I want my paper ticket, and
I don't want to be on my phone.
Yes, I don't want to be on my phone. And it stops people like you and me from, like, you and I wrecked the FastPass system, let's be honest. Like, they had to change it because people like you and I figured it out. And then we taught people how to do it. And so if you didn't, you know, buy your book or listen to my podcast, you didn't know how to get a dozen rides with FastPass.
Yeah.
So it's our fault. I blame us entirely.
I take no responsibility at all.
All right. It all falls on me. Fine. All right. Moving on. I noticed in your book that the book features a lot of quote unquote newbie alerts. And I noticed many of them revolve around ways to keep things stress-free, which is something I talk about a lot. I talk about being stress-free and I talk about how adults ruin everything. Like when we go with our kids, we're like, go, 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 whether our kids want to or not. you know, so things like taking a break, you know, a midday break, don't try and do it all, you know, things like that. So I want to talk about some of your favorite tips for keeping Disney World stress-free, as that's like one of my favorite themes.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Probably the biggest tip is just be flexible and be ready to ditch those plans. I think it's great and almost, not quite, but almost mandatory that you have some kind of a plan, but be ready to ditch the whole thing, especially with children, or you're going to have a family mutiny on your hands and then it's a mess. So nobody has fun if they're all upset and angry. And it's just, it's much better to go with the flow. If your kid wants to ride Dumbo five times, ride Dumbo five times.
I've been there.
Disney is still going to be there when they're older.
I was that kid, my mom will tell you. And my most recent trip, my daughter is seven. She was six at the time. We rode Dumbo again and again. And so that is truth facts right there.
So many of these things feel completely counterintuitive. Arrive early, take a midday break, either somewhere in the parks or outside of the parks, and come back in the evening. Totally counterintuitive because you've just spent all this money. But the enjoyment you get and the lowering of the stress level is huge. So I'm a big fan of that. Another thing that I think helps for newbies especially is before you even go, sit down with your family or your group. This works for anybody, but sit down with your family or your group. Everybody say what their top three must-do attractions or must-do experiences are. And from that, you're going to form a plan. Make those your daily plan. And anything else you can fit in is icing on the cake.
Pick your priorities. That's what I always say. Those are the things. Those are the must-dos. And anything else, that's just, you know, the cherry on top.
And those are your Genie Plus, too. I mean, not everybody's going to get one because you have such a limited number of Genie Plus. But if you're using it, those are the ones that you want to go for, those really big, you know, must-do top attractions that somebody would be really upset to miss.
Those are great tips.
I think another thing is to seek out those quiet places in the parks. You know, just there are places where you can kind of take a break. And again, counterintuitive to stop and let the magic catch up with you. But it is true that you will experience the parks in a much better way when you just slow down.
Okay, it's funny because I asked on Instagram for people to submit some questions. And I think you covered a couple of them just in this one topic. But the first one was advice on bringing a baby or, you know, a toddler for the first time. And the second one was the best place to take a nap in the park. So like a quiet spot in the park. So I think...
Yeah, some of my advice is really sort of simple, but makes a big difference. One thing that I think is really important, especially if you're going to rent one of the strollers, is to bring along a towel, because those strollers really are. So, you know, you want your baby and your toddler to be able to nap. Put a blanket down on the bottom of the stroller so it's comfortable and it's not so hot. You could also drape one over the stroller so that you've got this nice sort of quiet, cozy spot. I think that's pretty important. Ziploc bags. If you've read, you'll see so many ways to use Ziploc bags. But get those babies and toddlers into the splash fountains, if that's something that they enjoy. It's so spontaneous, which is almost unheard of at Disney. Nothing is really spontaneous at Disney. But bring along a big gallon-sized Ziploc bag with a change of clothes in it, and then put the wet clothes in that so your backpack doesn't get all wet. But just some of finding those ways to give toddlers and new walkers, give them ways to kind of be out of that overstimulating crowd. I think that's really important. I remember taking my oldest when he was, I think he was about 6 months old, and I did it all wrong. And it feels like all of my pictures of him are him like laying on a bench in a restaurant sound asleep or laying
we could share stories, I'm
yeah,
sure.
He was overdone. So finding those ways to just be really aware of how overstimulating this is for babies, for toddlers, and for young children.
Okay, well, that kind of brings me into the next one that somebody submitted. The next question was, where are places at the parks where you could take a nap? I don't know if they meant adults or if they meant like, you know, a quiet place for toddlers. I honestly don't know, but I feel like that kind of leads into this. If you need a quiet place, where can you go?
Anybody can nap. I hate to say this because this sounds really unpatriotic and I don't mean it and it's not disrespectful, but Hall of Presidents What a great place to take a nap. It's quiet. It's soothing. But if you don't want to go into an attraction and take a nap, there's the second floor of Columbia Harbor House in Magic Kingdom. Once you get past the rush hour there, it's really quiet. And that's a great place to take a small child just for a quiet, you know, they can have a nap in there. It's air conditioned. Epcot's a little bit harder, but to kind of get out of the real excitement, there's a terrace between the France Pavilion and the UK Pavilion down by the water. And nobody goes down there during the day. That's a good spot to just kind of be away from the mania. Oh, there's a path. Indiana Jones in Hollywood Studios. The Adventure Outpost, which is the light little gift shop area there.
Yeah.
If you go to the right of that, there's this path that almost nobody goes down there. So if you've got a baby or a small child in a stroller, that's a terrific place to get out of the crush. You think about Animal Kingdom. This is one of my favorite places, and you'll see adults napping down there too. Behind Flame Tree Barbecue, there's a dining pavilion. Actually, a few dining pavilions. It's right down by the water. It's quiet. Nobody goes down there outside. A few people do, but it's really quiet outside of lunchtime and dinner time.
I feel like Animal Kingdom has so many little hidden paths.
Yeah.
If you like, you really kind of have to look at the map, though, because it's so easy to just walk right by stuff in Animal Kingdom. But if you're like really looking at the map, you can kind of find some hidden paths.
I love that park. I love that park. It can be a restful experience if you're not rushing from attraction to attraction.
If you're not headed to Pandora.
If you are headed to Pandora, take the walkway between Africa and Pandora, which is usually much quieter.
There you go. Okay. All right. Let's move on to extras. Extra ticket events, after hours parties, holiday parties, dessert parties. Disney's all about the add-on, aren't they? Like there's, you know, you can do Disney without the add-ons, but they're all about like, hey, do you want to enhance your experience with this enchanting extra? So let's talk about some of these quote unquote enchanting extras.
Sure. Yes.
Do you think that these extras are worth it? If so, which ones are and which ones aren't?
If you have the budget for it, go for it. But if you're having to be choosy about where you spend your money, I kind of hate to say it, but I do think Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party and Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party are fantastic events. Kids get so much, and so do adults, but kids do get a lot out of those experiences. I've been to many, many, many dessert parties, which are really enjoyable. But if they don't really fit your budget, it's not that hard to find a really good place to watch the nighttime entertainment. And there are really good bakeries in the parks. Go grab your desserts and your drinks.
Yeah. So far, we're on the same page. Totally. Whereas I love the holiday parties. Even if you have to like cut a regular park day, I think the holiday parties, there's so many just extras.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth it. The dessert parties, I'm not a huge, they're expensive.
They are expensive
for what they are. And then I feel obligated to like drink where, you know, I'm like, I don't need to be drinking, but you're like, I'm getting my money's worth, you know? And I'm like, okay, I should not, like, that's a horrible way to be. Or like stuffing my face with, you know, chocolates that I don't need.
and I really do think that, you know, that's how most people feel. You know, same with the Disney dining plan. If you paid for that thing, you are going to eat that food. And it is a way.
Yeah, I'm gaining 20 pounds and you're going to roll me home because I'm going to get my money's worth.
And even if you're walking as much as you're walking, it does not make up for as
much
as you.
I try and sweat it out. I'm like, maybe it's Orlando. Maybe I can sweat it out.
It's a good thing to tell ourselves.
Right. Yeah, that's the mental gymnastics that I do on a daily basis. How about the after hours events? You know, they're similar to the holiday parties. It's like the hours are somewhat similar, but you don't get as many extras. How do you feel about those? Do you think those have value?
Anything has value if it's important to you. But again, if you're watching your budget, I I feel like there are maybe more interesting and more valuable ways to spend that budget.
Okay. I like them if you're able to cut park days, because you can do like every ride, you know, but doing it in addition, like if you're doing a week, do you need to add an after hours? Probably not. But if you're doing like a weekend, you know, I think maybe that could be worth it. But you're right, like budget time definitely, I think, makes a difference. All right, so we have one that you and I are yes, one that you and I are no, one that you and I are maybe.
Yes. Sounds right.
Yeah. How about things like Magic Band Plus? I know that you've been on the road, but have you had a chance to play with the new Magic Bands? And do you think they're worth it? They're a little pricey.
Yeah, I did have a chance to use the Magic Band Plus, and I think they're fun. But again, I'm not sure that that's where I'd put my hard-earned money.
Oh, you and I are really on the same page with a lot of this stuff. I bought one and was horribly disappointed. I hate to say it. I think if it's something you want to do, this is just, man, I don't know what your thought is. I tell people, buy, like, if you got a group of five people, buy one.
Absolutely.
Don't buy five for everybody, because it's, you know, it's just probably
you're
not
going to get that. You're not going to.
Are all five of you going to make the same statue talk? I can never get them to talk. It never works when I do it. I don't know if something's wrong with me. I can never get them.
I don't think it's you.
I can never get them to do what they're supposed to do. So for me, I'm like, it lights up during fireworks. You know, is that worth the money? Probably not.
Yeah. No, we're definitely in agreement on that one. Yeah.
Let's talk, since we're talking value, and I understand that value is subjective. You know, what I find value in, somebody else might not. But I am curious in your thoughts on resorts and the resort levels. So let's start with like value resorts versus moderate resorts. Do you think it's worth it to upgrade from a value to a moderate resort?
I think it really depends on a few things. One is obviously your budget, but one is how many times you've been to Walt Disney World. When I first started going every year, you know, I stayed at All Stars because I was not in my room. I was out in the parks from early until closing. So, you know, it kind of depends on how you really use your resort. Pools are nice enough. You know, your kid is going to want to go to the pool at All Stars as much as they're going to want to go to the pool at the Grand Floridian. So, but yeah, there are, you know, if you've been a few times and you want to do something a little bit more themed and a little bit special, and you want a little bit more amenity at your resort because you may not be pounding the parks all day long and all night long, I do think it's worth upgrading to a moderate. And if your idea of a Walt Disney World vacation includes a lot of luxury, you know, the deluxe resorts are lovely. That's how I would choose.
You know, I was just going to ask if you felt deluxe are worth the price tag, because that's an expensive hotel room.
That's an expensive hotel room. Yes, it is. I would not be spending my money on the villas, like the Poly villas. They're absolutely wonderful. They really are very, very nice. But that's not where I want to spend my money, because I wouldn't be spending time there. But I would stay at the Wilderness Lodge, or I would stay at, you know, some of the deluxe resorts that have a lot of amenity and good restaurants. But I personally would not go that extra step up.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah, there's so much to take into account. So I understand that this is like such a subjective question. But like because I travel either by myself a lot or with, you know, one or two other adults, often we're just doing value resorts. I don't have a child who has to take a nap in the afternoon. I'm not going to be like sitting out in a balcony for an hour. I'm just getting up and going. So why do I need to spend a bunch of money on a room? But when I've gone with family, we've stayed, you know, Animal Kingdom and gotten Savannah, which I almost never pay to upgrade for a view. That's just like, for me personally, and again, this is me, the value typically isn't there. But I was like, no, I'm going to sit out on that balcony with my coffee in the morning and I'm going to look at giraffes, you know, like that's Do you have any tips for saving money on rooms?
Yeah, stay one. If you want to stay at a really nice resort, take a day out of the parks and really, you know, book one night at that resort. Book not one night at your dream deluxe resort, which for me is Animal Kingdom Lodge, and just spend the day there. Get one less day, you know, in the parks, and put that money towards one night at a deluxe resort.
I love that idea.
Yeah. My husband and I, you know, we stay at these resorts oftentimes through press events, and we're never in our room. We're constantly on the go. So, you know, we've been to Animal Kingdom Lodge several times where we didn't get to sit out on the balcony. And right. Was it 2 years ago? It was probably 2 years ago. We went and stayed on our own, not through an event. And we sat out watching the animals, and we walked around the resort, and we did, you know, all the wonderful little art, the wonderful little experiences at the resort. We didn't need a park. It was just a wonderful day. And to me, that's worth upgrading for one night.
I never thought of to do it that way. Like, I've always said, you know, cut a park day if you want to do this extra that maybe isn't in your budget. But I never thought about it in terms of resorts. And I think that's brilliant. And it's, I can hear people right now who are listening to this go like, well, why would I want to spend the whole day at a resort? But not only is there a lot to see, there's also a lot to do. There are always activities. You know, yep. Like there's always like crafts for the kids or games or things like that. There's restaurants at the higher end resorts. There's just so much to do and see. Oh, I love that. I think that's an amazing tip.
And you know, to take that day out of the park again, you know, so much of what I talk about in the book, a lot of it is very counterintuitive. It just doesn't make sense. Why would I go all this way and spend all this money? But genuinely, taking that day out of the parks, if that's what you want to do, it to experience a resort that's outside your normal budget, it's just your whole attitude gets reset, and your kids' attitude and your husband's attitude, whoever's not like the not so much a Disney fan in your group, their attitude gets reset.
Yeah.
And I think it's money well spent.
And can I say too, I would just like to add, if you're going to do this, start with the value resort and end with the high-end resort. Because if you do Absolutely. It the other way around, you'll check into the value resort then and be like, aw.
It's crushing. Yeah, and the value resorts are great.
They are. But after being pampered, you know, at a deluxe, it might be a little different than moving to All Stars. So
yeah,
I would say, just personal suggestion, maybe do it value first.
Absolutely.
Then deluxe.
Yeah.
I agree. Let's talk food.
One of my favorite subjects. I'm happy to talk.
Okay, good. Because, you know, I have a lot of opinions on Disney food and what's worth it and what isn't. So I want to know just you personally, what are your can't miss food items? Restaurants, snacks, quick service, whatever. Like, what are your go-tos?
For me, Nomad Lounge at Animal Kingdom. Just that wonderful porch at the back of Tiffin's. I love that spot. Talk about a great place to go and relax as adults, especially, and just kind of get out of it all for a little while. To me, for restaurants, probably Nomad Lounge is one of my favorite areas. Tiffin's I really like. Morimoto at Disney Springs, but specifically for their ribs. It's life-changing. I love their ribs. For quick service, I think it's Galaxy's Edge has been a game changer for me.
Right?
Well, that I could spend all my time in Galaxy's Edge. And I was never like a huge Star Wars fan to start with. But, you know, I remember the first movie coming out and just sitting in a dead silent theater when that you know, spaceship passes over at the beginning. But Galaxy's Edge has been a game changer for me. And one dining location that I love, and this is probably going to be really controversial, is Ronto Roasters.
Oh my God. No, how we are on the same page, like with everything. So I stopped eating meat for several years. I do eat meat occasionally now. So I've had both the regular wrap and the vegan wrap, and it's my favorite thing at Hollywood Studios, both of them. Whether I'm going to like cheat and eat meat or not, Both are my favorite. Ronto Roasters is the best.
What is it? I don't know what they're putting in that stuff, but man.
And the breakfast one is good too. The breakfast one, I'm like, this is phenomenal.
No, I haven't had the one. I'll have to try that.
Oh, go eat it. It's spicy. It's so good. I've only had the vegan breakfast one. It's like chickpeas. It's so good.
No, I would love that.
Next time, go eat it.
I will definitely do that.
Then you tell me. You tell me how much you loved it.
I'm always happy with, you know, a vegan. We do eat meat now and then, but I'm always happy with really. And Disney has really upped their game on.
Oh, my God,
yes. They've done really well with some non-meat, plant-based options. I've been impressed by what I've seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can get plant-based options anywhere. And Disney Springs is a little hit or miss. But at any of the parks, the resorts, their plant-based options are so good.
Yep, they've done a great job with that. As far as snacks, I'm just super boring with snacks. One of my favorite foods is popcorn.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I just, like, on the last episode, I went on this rant about the the limited edition, you know, for limited time only at this party, event, whatever stupid treat they have. They are never worth it. I think you're better off just going for the classic.
Popcorn, Mickey bar, Dole Whip.
The ice cream sandwich is good.
Yep.
There's a reason that they have been staples for so many years.
Absolutely. And if you're going to go for that Dole Whip, order it on your mobile ordering. Order it on your phone. Do not stand in that line. Just mobile order it. Sitting outside the Dole Whip counter, hit I'm here, prepare my Dole Whip. And walk up. Don't stand in that line. That's ridiculous.
Could not agree more. There's no shade in that line.
None.
You're just out there in the sun baking.
Yeah.
How about hard to get restaurants? Do you have any advice? People ask me constantly, how do I get space 220? I want space 220 still people have a challenge with.
Yeah. If you're staying on site, it really helps to book your dining reservation because you can do them all. Book your dining reservations in reverse order. Don't start with your first day. Start with your last day and work backwards because everybody is going to start with, you know, the first day. So it's a lot easier. You've got a much better chance of getting something the last day of your vacation than you do if you start at the beginning. If you're staying offsite, don't call in. Use the online booking system. So put up a bunch of windows or, you know, browser windows. Have all your dining reservations, your wish list, have it stacked, and then, you know, you can get each one much easier that way. Don't call in because it's just, you will wait forever.
The hold times if you try and call in, no thing. I don't ever call in for anything. Like, I don't want to sit on hold for 2 hours.
Yeah, well, I think that's been a really big improvement, and I'm not a huge fan of some of the technology that we now have to deal with a Disney vacation, but the online booking is, the online system in general is so much better than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, I feel like anytime anything happens. So I recently signed up for Wine and Dine, the Run Disney, and it's me and my teenage son. And so, like, I registered myself and then it's, you know, add another racer. I don't know if you've ever done a Run Disney event.
We have never done one. No.
So I went to add him and you have to be like, go, 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 assuming you can even get in. But I got it. The race I wanted was still open. So I'm like, scrambling, trying to like, so I get me, I go to add him and the drop down was broken for like adding his shirt size, which of course was a requirement to submit the form. I was like, are you kidding me? So I have to take the risk, and I registered only myself, and then I went back in with a new registration and registered him, and luckily it worked out. But I was like, how is a drop down broken? Like, how do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know.
I know nothing about anything, and even I could, like, I know how to on my website set up drop down boxes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, come on, Disney, get it together. So sometimes I'm like, I don't know what's going on there with their IT, but it's not my favorite thing.
There are still challenges, but it used to be worse.
Yeah. That's saying something, huh? Let's talk about practical tips. And you now live in Orlando, so you deal with this on a daily basis. But, you know, products for heat and sweat, that's something else I talk about a lot, is that I'm like a sweaty monster. And so being in Orlando, I'm constantly like trying the new whatever products to not be disgusting. But just tips for like heat, humidity, stuff to make you comfortable at the parks. What are your go-tos?
Well, a Mr. Fan is really nice. It is something you have to carry around. Buy it at, and those neck things, you know, that you get them wet and they like stay cool. But buy them off-site. Don't buy them in the parks. Get it before you get to the parks. And those are really helpful. I really like Body Glide.
Oh, and tell me more.
Yeah, it's almost looks like a deodorant stick. It's a thing that bicyclists use, and it really prevents chafing. And this is for anybody, but especially if you've got that really cute little sundress that you want to wear into the parks, Body Glide is a game changer.
I know all about the thigh chafing as a large thighed woman. yes. Okay. I'm going to put that on my to try list.
Definitely.
I wear like shorties if I'm wearing a dress, because that also helps to, you know, because getting on some of those rides, you know, like Tron, for example, I'm a man designed Tron, because there is no way to sit on that if you're wearing a dress or a skirt. I had like a long dress on, so it was all like wadded up in front of me. I've been on in like a short dress. I'm like, well, somebody's getting a show here. So
yeah.
A man designed that, but we're going to work around it with shorties and some Body Glide for, you know,
the Body Glide
there,
is
getting on and off.
Even with, you know, I wear bike shorts under a dress because,
there you
as
go.
You say, it's just, it's Orlando.
It's practical. Yes.
But that whole modesty thing too
with rides like Tron. Yeah. How about things for your phone? Because as we mentioned earlier, you're on your phone all the time, because they're not, despite my pleas, they're not bringing paper fast pass back. So what about tips for your phone at the parks?
Well, it helps if more than one person has a phone. And if you know that you're not going to be getting, there's no chance that you're going to be getting any kind of an urgent call, it helps to turn off at least one phone, so that when, you know, the first one runs out of battery, you just use the second one. That's a super easy way to do it. But also bring in, either buy or you can rent in the parks, I think they're called fuel rods.
They are, yes.
Those are great because you can just charge on the go. You can also, we've got a bunch of little solar chargers. This is Florida. This is, you know, the Sunshine State. So the solar chargers are really terrific as well. But definitely, and dim your screen, close your apps, clear out your photo gallery.
I'm always like, low power mode, people. Low power mode.
Airplane mode. If you know you're not likely to get a call, everybody you love is with you. You know, just shut down everything you can and try to save that battery.
Yeah, and buying a battery pack ahead of time is way cheaper and better than fuel. Like, fuel rods are great in a pinch.
Yeah.
But, you know, something you're going to get off of, like an Anchor brand off of Amazon, is going to be way better than the fuel rods. But in a pinch, I have 100% purchased a fuel rod, too.
Yeah,
you know, when I've forgotten and I'm like, crap, my phone's about to die. And, you know, I'm on it constantly trying to book my lightning lanes.
If you make the rookie mistake, you can get the fuel rods in the park. And then when it runs out, you can actually re-up it with a new one. But yeah, these kinds of things that if you can prepare in advance, have them with you from whatever your favorite lower price store is off-site, you're going to be ahead of the game. And you will use it. You will need it.
Oh, yes. Yes. As we said, you're on your phone a lot. So, okay. Even though we just referred to it as the Sunshine State, rain is also an issue, especially if you're traveling in the fall. Tips for rain, like ponchos versus umbrellas or things like that. Any tips for people?
I have a love-hate relationship with ponchos. They're super lightweight. Again, buy them off-site. They can get really hot and humid. It's like a little microclimate under there. But when you're trying to walk around the parks with an umbrella, unless you've got some skill I do not have, it is tough, especially when it's crowded. My biggest tip with rain is go anyway, because you're going to be, the crowds are usually a lot less. You know, we're talking about all day rain here. And I think it helps to plan ahead. If you're there in the summertime when we have our, you know, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock downpour, plan your indoor attractions, the big shows, plan those for that time frame and do the outdoor attractions before that rain and after that rain hit.
There you go.
So those are some of the things that, and again, your Ziploc baggies, those things, they don't weigh anything. They don't take up any space, but they're so useful. Bring a change of socks. If you get caught in, if you're wearing, you know, trainers, tennis shoes, whatever you call them, wherever you're from, it just helps to have, and even in the summer, you know, bring a change of socks because your feet get so sweaty and it really revives you. So, yep, the Ziploc bags, you can throw your phone in it if you get caught in a downpour.
And your stinky socks in a separate bag, not in the same one as your phone. Separate bag for your stinky socks. Yes.
Ideally.
My husband likes to joke with the ponchos. His money-saving tip is that he packs hot dogs and then cooks them in his poncho when he's wearing it because it gets, like, so hot and humid. He's like, money-saving tip, guys.
I've never heard that, but he's so right.
He's,
you know,
listen, he's one in a million. He is one in a million, let me tell you. I do not endorse this particular tip. This is 100% my husband.
Well, I think he's onto something.
I know I said practical tips. That's probably not the most practical. All right, let's talk about Disney with kids and Disney without kids. We talked a little bit about traveling with babies and toddlers, but how about like free or creative souvenir ideas for kids? I've got three kids, so buying everybody souvenirs costs a fortune.
Yeah, I like the idea of doing personalized frames for the photos that you're going to take. So just get a white frame that, and have the character sign it. And, you know, maybe bring along a few different colors of markers. Have the character sign the mat, not the frame, sorry, the mat. And that's a great souvenir. Little golden books. I don't know if they're still easy to get or not.
They are. My daughter, she's 7 and still loves little golden books. We have a million of them. And I actually just bought, Disney Parks released several based on rides.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like the best thing ever. But yes, little golden books, definitely still a thing.
So if they've got, you know, get one with the character that your child loves the most and then have the character sign that. Characters are allowed to sign clothing if a person's not wearing it. So that's another, you know, fun with a marker that is waterproof so it won't come off in the wash. Pressed pennies. Kids love those things. And you don't even need the penny anymore. You just stick a dollar in the cheap souvenir. Oh, but another one that I really like, especially, you know, if you're an adult or if you have teens or older kids, when you're in Epcot in World Showcase, Morocco, Japan, China, ask a cast member to sign your autograph book because they'll sign it in their language. So, you know, it's a really unusual, and people don't think to do that. So you have something, you know, pretty special, especially if you've met a cast member who's done something special for you. I mean, they're the magic of the parks, cast members. And you'll get a really great interaction out of it, too. Ask them about their home. You know, those are priceless memories, and then get their signature in your autograph book.
That's a really cool. I had no idea that they would sign it in their own language. That's really cool. Yeah. I never thought to do that. Well, okay, those are some really fun, cheap, free souvenirs. How about ways to prepare your kids for a trip?
Well, they usually are getting up early for school, so that one's already licked. That's more the, you know, adults having to set your alarm early if you're not used to getting up early. I think one of the really fun ways to go about that is to have Disney movie nights, and especially some of these movies that kids may not be as familiar with the characters. You aren't going to necessarily need to do Frozen. You aren't going to necessarily need to do Mulan. But some of the older movies that young kids may not be as familiar with the characters. That's a good way to kind of prepare them. But I think one of, especially with kids, one of the things to prepare for is the size of the characters. So don't book that character meal on your first day or your second day. Put them in the parks, let them see these head characters from a distance, gauge how they're reacting, and then book it if, you know, if they're not totally freaked out.
If they're not like screaming.
Have you seen the video with the one little girl at some, she's at some, it's a character breakfast, and she's just like, her face is just stone. She does not want to. Don't let that be you.
That has been my children at one point or another.
Don't let that
Okay, let's talk Disney without kids. How about like date nights or hot spots if you're just adults going to the parks?
Yeah, places like Narcoossee's, the less obvious places that aren't as many families. And book your dining after 8:30 because most of the families will have dined by that time. So you're better. The later you can book it, the less chance you're going to have of running into a lot of overstimulated kids. Obviously, Victoria and Albert's is guaranteed no kids. For a really fun evening, if you like raucous, Trader Sam's after, I think it's 8 o'clock, 21 and up. You aren't going to get the kids in there. So those are good choices. Narcoossee's, though, you get the piped-in music during the fireworks, which is really nice. So, and seek out some of the lounges. There's a wonderful little lounge in Animal Kingdom Lodge. Kids can be in there, but in the evening, it's really quiet and it's really just adults only. So look for lounges. The Enchanted Rose at Grand Floridian. Those are good places if you want a little bit more romantic date night or you want less child energy around you. And the later bookings are better.
In my experience, every single child is at the pool at the Value Resorts after 8 p.m. The moment I'm trying to go to sleep, they're all in the pool being, you know, volume 11, every last one of them. So,
yep.
Okay, let's do a quick lightning round here. Okay, these are just your personal opinion. Okay, there's no wrong answer here. Okay, favorite ride?
Oh, Haunted Mansion.
Least favorite ride?
The Astro Orbiters.
Best park?
Oh, the one I'm in.
Well, that's a good answer. Most underrated resort?
I'm going to say Fort Wilderness.
Not So Scary Halloween or Very Merry Christmas?
I'm going to say Not So Scary.
Pandora or Galaxy's Edge?
Galaxy's Edge.
Best character meet?
Oh, Tinkerbell.
Mickey or Minnie?
Oh, Mickey. No, Minnie. No, Minnie. Minnie. No, I can't. Minnie.
Okay, we're going with Minnie. I'm also going with Minnie.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's all I got.
Okay.
This has been great. You've got some really great tips. We're definitely on the same page about a lot of stuff, which makes me feel better because you are the author. So I appreciate that.
I think anybody who really dedicates their time to this, and you know, you're doing a lot of really great work. You know, you're paying attention, so you've got your expertise as well.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, that means a lot coming from you.
Just embrace that.
Well, thank you for being on the show.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This has been so much fun. Again, Susan's new book is called Walt Disney World Hacks, the second edition. You can buy it now. Look for a link in the show notes for that book, and I'll also include Susan's other books. As you may or may not have guessed, The Hidden Magic of Walt Disney World. I'm a big fan of that one. If you're looking to get a quote on your Disney World vacation, and now's the time, by the way, big 30% discount just dropped. So head to the show notes, click the link for a free quote. Costs you nothing and it helps fund the show. Otherwise, I'll be back next week and I will see you guys in the parks.